any race, 5K, 10K, there's a certain amount of mental toughness. But, you know, mental toughness, I think, is the most key ingredient in training.
The Diz Runs With podcast, episode 306, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we get started with today's episode, just want to remind you or let you know for the first time, depending on what the case may be, that next week, Thursday, September the 15th, 2016, the price for the Coterie will be going up. And if you're interested and you get in before the date of increase, so anytime between now and next week, you'll be able to lock in the current price for as long as you stay in the group. If you haven't heard about the Coterie before, it's my hybrid coaching program. So you still get an individual customized training plan, but you also get a lot of what I think are cool and very beneficial group dynamics. There's a group interaction, webinars, guides, just a whole bunch of things that you get that really kind of blends a lot of the group training components with the customized training plan for you, which I think is the most important thing about any type of coach relationship, is that you're getting a training plan that's created with you specifically in mind. So if you want to check out more about the Coterie, check it out, dizruns.com/coterie. That's Coterie. And if you have any questions, just let me know and I'll be happy to answer them for you. But again, remember, September the 15th, the price will go up. And if you get in before that, you will lock in your price, the current price, for as long as you're part of the group. So with that, let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is someone that is sure to inspire you to rethink the impossible. He's pretty much been beating the odds since birth, when his mother was told that there was a good chance he'd never be able to walk because of deformities in his legs. Fast forward to today, and not only is he walking, but he's completed a variety of different running events, and later this year, he will hopefully be adding the title of 100-mile finisher to his list of running accomplishments. It's a pleasure today to be able to go a few easy miles with fellow Floridian and fellow Ultra Ambassador, Andy Farina. Thanks for joining us today, Andy.
Hey, Denny. It's great to be with you guys, and really great to talk with you.
Definitely, definitely. And guys, if you want to connect with Andy, social media is probably the best way to do so. On the Twitter, you can find him real simple on Twitter. It's just at Andy Farina. And on Instagram and Facebook, it's a little more complicated, but on Instagram, it's at second, it's just the number 2ND, at second_half_Andy. And on Facebook, it's Andy.Farina, the number 2. So if you do facebook.com/Andy.Farina2. And as always, I'll have the links to all of Andy's social media accounts and links to anything else that makes sense to link to during our conversation at the show notes for this episode, which you'll be able to find at dizruns.com/306. So, Andy, the way we always start off the show is with a pretty simple and straightforward question that sometimes has a simple and straightforward answer, and sometimes it has anything but a simple and straightforward answer. But I'm just going to ask it and see where it takes us, and that's just to simply say, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Well, that's a great question, Denny. I love 50K and above for the simple reason I laugh and joke to myself and say, you know, I'm not very fast, I'm not very strong, but man, I could just keep going. So, you know, 50K and above, you know, hopefully I'll add 100 mile to my favorite in November, but I really like the long races. I like everything you go through in those things.
Right, right. And I want to get into a lot of that stuff as we go along, but I have to kind of ask, because you know, we're a couple hours apart in Central Florida, but the landscape from Gainesville, where you are, to Lakeland, where I am, not a whole lot different, and not a whole lot of excitement in said landscape. And a lot of the folks that I talk to that do ultra distance type of races and events, you know, talk about one of the things they love so much about going those longer distances is, you know, time on the trails, in the mountains, in the hills, like just, you know, that whole experience. And all I can think of, and you know, I'm still holding out on that ultra distance stuff, but my resolve is getting weaker. But down here in Florida, I'm like, man, I just, you know, I don't want to run, you know, 20 miles in the swamp, let alone 31 miles for a 50K or whatever other ultra distance events that that might tempt me. So do you do most of your ultra stuff here? And if so, how do you put up with the swamp and the gross for that long? Or do you kind of try to get out of the state for some of your longer stuff?
Well, most of our races are out of state. I mean, we really like running in the mountains, which is really a challenge. I say we, me and some buddies that, you know, I like to race with. We really like going up to North Georgia. Mm-hmm. And twice a year I fly out to Colorado for work. And so I do get to run out in Colorado. And I love running in the mountains. I love running out west, which is really funny because we live in flat Florida.
Right.
So it makes it really challenging in your training. But we're very fortunate here in Gainesville because we have San Flasco Park, which has, you know, I haven't even explored all the trails yet, but it's like 50 plus miles or something to that effect of trails. And we run out there all the time. And there's other trail locations where at least you get, you know, you get out in the woods, it's quiet, you know, you're running on single track, mm-hmm. there's lots of routes. And so it's, you know, it can be, at times it can be technical, not nearly as technical as the races we're just doing. The race I just did this past weekend, which was 20 miles west of Atlanta, the Yeti Snake Bite was in Sweetwater Creek State Park, which is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And so we try to get out of state for a lot of the races, even though I do enjoy doing swamp races here in Florida. And I've done multiple 50Ks here in Florida. But when it really gets down to the bigger ones, 50 mile and above, I'm looking out of state. And, you know, I prefer that. And I prefer the challenge of dealing with the mountains because it forces me to have to come up with more creative ways to train and keeps me really interested. And I come from an engineering background, so I really like to analyze things. And so it makes it kind of a fun and experimental journey. So if that answers the question, so yeah. Be it. But either way, we're having fun.
Absolutely.
I don't mind running. I love running along the beach. I do a fair amount of that when I can. My wife's from Sarasota, and so we go down there often, and I run the beach down there. But I'll run just about anywhere I can. Even I run in the grass on the side of the roads on the hilliest route in Gainesville a lot when I can't make it to the trail. So when there's a will, there's a way for sure.
Definitely. What do you, you know, you talk about trying to be creative to help train for some of the climbing that you have to do when you're in some of these other races. What, you know, inquiring minds of mine, if not anybody else, because other people have, you know, actual natural landscape to train on. But what kind of hacks have you found for hill training in the flatland?
Right. Great question. I've experimented some, and the things I'm finding, you know, the great results with so far has been a combination of things. The simple things, which are not so simple because Olympic lifts are not very simple, but just adding, making sure I have, you know, squats and deadlifts and farmer's walks and weighted lunges in my training regimen. I do put in a fair amount of miles every week, but I also make sure I'm in the weight room, you know, a couple times a week, you know, working on leg strength and things like that. I also do a lot of rucking where I have my ruck, which is basically a military style backpack. And I throw a ton of weight in that and I'll cruise around in that. And then also we are very fortunate here to have, speaking of swamps, we have the swamp, the University of Florida football stadium. And I started a training group there 11 years ago called the Running Man Club, or RMC. And every week for the last 11 years, I've been on that stadium going up and down Gator Mountains, which is 90 rows of bleachers. And of course, that has come in handy on some of your power hiking and climbs. When we did Georgia Death Race, there was 40,000 feet of elevation change over a 68-mile course.
Oof.
And so it was a lot of climbing and descending. You could tell who the Floridians were. My climbing was pretty strong, but my descending was weak when I first started because I saw guys were just flying down these trails. But, you know, slowly but surely you keep at it and you get better and you have a good time doing it, and it works. So that's some of what I do in the training process. It's not just about running. It's about specificity of training. And, you know, being a trainer, I like designing workouts, you know, that, you know, help meet the need of myself and then all my many friends and many clients that I train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we mostly stick to the couple of overpasses in town. Just run up and run down.
One.
There are actually a couple of, you know, what anybody that lived in real hills wouldn't necessarily call hills, but like, you know, the kind of things that when you drive them, you kind of notice it's a hill, but when you run them, like they're short, you know, but you can run up and down and up and down and up and down, and then you get a pretty decent workout that way. But it's certainly no substitute for having, you know, the people that live in the foothills, or like you said, North Georgia, or in the Appalachians, or certainly out west, where it's just like trail, like there is no flat, everything is either up or down, and it's just, you know, beautiful all the time.
Yes. And that's, I forgot to mention that, but you nailed it. Hill repeats, you find the biggest incline you can find, mm-hmm. and you just do repeats, lots of repeats. Yeah, so you're smart.
Not the most exciting workouts, but beneficial, pays off.
Yeah. And it builds that mental toughness too, which in the long races, you know, I mean, it's true in all races. I mean, you know, any race, 5K, 10K, there's a certain amount of mental toughness. But, you know, mental toughness, I think, is the most key ingredient in training. Personally, I feel like that's a non-negotiable. So I try to find ways. I go out in the afternoons and I'll run in, you know, 2 and 3 o'clock heat just because, you know, it's uncomfortable.
Right.
And you find different ways to make it, you know, where you have to focus and you have to be uncomfortable. So those are great options. So yeah. I think it helps.
Definitely. You mentioned the Running Man Club. What was it that got you to, that inspired you to start that, I don't know if tradition is quite the right word, but the routine of, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to just go pound out these bleachers, you know, once a week for 11 years.
Right. Well, I've kind of got a pioneering spirit, and so I'm always looking for something else, you know, to experiment with. But really what came out of it was, you know, I had this nasty back injury that kept me out of running for, like 18 years. And so it had flared back up. And I basically was just, the only thing I could do was swim for about 9 months. And I'm not a good swimmer, but, you know, I did what I could do because I wanted to stay conditioned while my back was once again healing. And the first day coming back where I could actually try to do some kind of, you know, running, well, not really running because I hadn't run in, you know, almost 2 decades,
But
I thought, man, some friends are going out and they're gonna go up and down the bleachers at the swamp. I'm gonna go with them. So I went over there with them and I did it. And I was like, man, this is fun. You know, this is different, you know. And so the following week I recruited one of my buddies to come out there with me. And it was just he and I, and we'd go up and down the bleachers and such. And I thought, this is really fun. So I just kept doing it. And then I invited a few other friends and a few other friends. And the funny part of it is, I like to entertain myself when I'm out there suffering. And so here I am, I'm yelling out Arnold Schwarzenegger quotes, you know, while we're going up and down these bleachers from all his movies. I'm like, to the chopper, and, you know, all this different stuff. And there was one particular movie that had a number of funny quotes in it called The Running Man. And so I just was going up and down. Now we were up to about 10 or 15 friends were doing this every week. And I said, hey, we should just call ourselves the Running Man Club. And they were all like, that's a great idea. Even the ladies were like, that's a great idea. And it just kind of went from there. So for 11 years now, it's just been going and it's grown and grown. And people have ventured from that into, you know, ultra runs and Ironman triathlons and, you know, Spartan races and Tough Mudders and all different kinds of things we train for. And we train multiple days a week. And it was just, I just wanted to give something back to the community because I feel like not everybody can really afford to always spend the money on a trainer and such. And I just wanted to do something for the community of Gainesville that was kind of fun and enjoyable and, you know, pushed people to do something to, you know, get healthy type of thing and to get more healthy than they already are, you know. And so I just decided I'm going to do this and I'm going to invite friends along and let's see what happens. And it's just been a great thing that just kind of kept going.
What are the numbers at the workouts like these days?
My Monday workout right now is about 25 to 35 people, and it's mostly like it completely turns over every few years because people leave Gainesville or they find something that, like, all my buddies that became Ironman triathletes, you know, they're training for three endurance sports at once, and they just haven't been able to squeeze in yet another workout. So I don't get to train with them as much anymore, but I'm really happy they found something they love, and that somehow running up and down these stadiums kind of launched their triathlon career. So there is a lot of turnover, but, you know, we have about 30, 35 people that come out on Mondays, and then we have a Saturday morning workout where we cross train in one of the local parks, and, you know, that may have 15 to 25 people. And then there's other times that, you know, people meet to run trails together. So RMC has kind of just become this big community in Gainesville that probably encompasses, I don't know, about 50 plus people, you know, and while they're living in Gainesville, they're apart. And when they move on, I have a friend who's down in, who's out in Jacksonville, and my son is in Jacksonville. And we were just talking over the weekend about him starting this in Jacksonville, and then some other friends that moved away that said, "Man, you know, we haven't found anything like this where we're living." And I kind of say, "Well, why don't you start it? Just go out and start doing stuff, and invite some friends along, and see what happens." So, who knows? I'd love it to become like a movement across the country of just helping people to get together and have fun and get healthier in new ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the name of the game, is finding ways to make it fun and you know, bringing some friends along. Although I think you could make a strong argument that if you're inviting me to go run stairs at 5 o'clock in the evening in Florida in July, maybe we're not as good of friends as we think we are.
Well, that's one of the quotes I have to tell people when they bring their friends, because they often bring their friends. And I said, you make sure you stay friends with them when you're done. Okay.
Yeah. So like, it's one of those, you know, if friends like this, who needs enemies type of
that's
situations.
Right. Well, we like being kind of crazy.
Yeah. Well, if you live down here year round, you know, like it's just hot. Like, you can either not do anything for 9 months of the year, or you can suck it up and, you know, get outside and be active. So I'll take the sweating and the activity over just slobbing around doing nothing for 9 or 10 months a year any day.
You called it, Denny. I'm with you on that for sure. I figure I do yard work in this heat, I might as well do some other stuff too.
Right. Yeah. That's a little bit more fun than the yard work, I imagine.
For sure.
So you talked about the 18 years off with the back injury. And we mentioned in the intro that even from kind of day one, you know, this idea of being active and running and marathons and ultra marathons was kind of a long shot. So the spirit of overcoming and not maybe like succumbing to what the experts maybe say, or the doctors might say, or whatever. Why I don't know exactly how to ask this other than like why, what motivated you so much to say, you know what, like, I'm not going to, you know, from a young age, like I got to imagine that even as a kid or a teenager, things like that, like, you know, there was this almost a pressure, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn. If I am, please correct me.
No, you're fine.
From the doctors or things like that saying, like, I don't know, we need to be careful. He's got this issue, he's got that issue. And obviously you weren't one to say you couldn't do this. You weren't one to be told you couldn't do this. Like, where did that come from you? Is that just something that you've always had? And let's start there and we'll see where this takes
us. Yeah, that's a great question. I think about that a lot. Cause you know, I was the youngest of four kids, and I was born, you know, back in 1962, 7 weeks premature. And so I was a very tiny baby, and my legs were messed up, and the doctors told my mom he'll never walk. And I was in casts and braces, you know, my older sister told me I was in casts and braces the first 4 or 5 years of my life, kind of like Forrest Gump. And then, you know, it's my earliest memory of it is I was about five, maybe six, because I kind of felt like I was just like every other kid, you know, about five or six. I remember asking my mom, saying, you know, Mom, when can I wear normal shoes like the other kids? Because I had to wear these corrective shoes. And, you know, the doctors kind of upgraded me after a little bit, saying, well, he may be able to walk, but it's going to be with a bad limp. You know, he won't be able to run. And I grew up in a very athletic neighborhood in New York. And, you know, I was always like the last guy to get picked, you know, kind of thing. And I just hated that, you know. But I was just, you know, I guess I was just given, like, a stubbornness. I jokingly call myself a stubborn Italian. You know, I was always told you can't do this and you can't do that. You're not going to be able to run. You're not going to be able to walk, you know, this kind of thing. And that just didn't faze me. It was like, you know, I just kind of followed my heart. And it was really interesting too, because I think about like when I was a teenager, you know, I liked sports and I played, but you know, I really fought hard, you know, to come off the bench and play. I was never like one of the best players, but I, you know, because I was a hard worker, I got in. And that kind of passion for something you love and that stubbornness, that God-given stubbornness that I happen to be given, maybe my wife's not as happy about it as I am, but you know, I just didn't listen. Mm-hmm. When they said you can't, it almost like I dug my heels in further, and it became really obvious. Like, at, you know, when I got a bad back injury when I was 18 playing football, and it progressively got worse until I was 30. And when I was 30, it was awful. And the doctor said, "That's it. You're done. You're never going to run anymore. You're not going to do anything." And I just didn't feel like that's I needed to give up. You know, I just had this inner sense of hope that, you know, I don't feel I'm too young to give up. Mm-hmm. I'm only 30 years old at the time. And so I didn't want to have surgery. They were talking surgery. And if you look at my MRI right now, you'll crack up because my L5-S1 disc is pretty much gone. Mm. You can't even see it. It's just a little black space between the vertebrae. And my L4, L5 disc is about, you know, 50% gone. And you look at that and you say, how does Andy do what he does? And all I can say is, you know, I was in pain 24/7 for 23 years. Oof. No solutions. I decided not to take drugs because it wasn't helping. You know, no pain relief, no nothing. I just dealt with it. And then I went through all these different therapies and really worked at my rehab. And my wife was like, I've never seen anybody work at rehab like you. My wife's a nurse. Mm. You know, I just had this inner passion and drive, you know, not to give up on the dream of one day being able to do the things that I really felt like I wanted to do. And, you know, and whether people are spiritual or not, or religious or not, there's all these scientific studies out that show that, you know, people that didn't know they were being prayed for and were prayed for somehow have a higher healing rate than those who don't. And I had all these friends for like decades praying for my back to heal and stuff like that. And I was praying about it and talking to God and saying, you know, I don't feel like I should quit. Are you okay with that? And he never said to quit. So I was just like, I'm just going to kind of keep going. And so it was about in 2009. We had made some progress in my therapy and found out that my right leg was a half inch anatomically. The bone was a half inch shorter than my left leg. So once we put in a full length insert in my shoe and leveled out my hips, coupled with breaking up all the muscular adhesions from, you know, 40 plus years of walking and with a peg leg, and then started working on all my muscular imbalances, I went out one day and I was like, okay, it's been 18 years that I haven't run. I'm going to go out and run a mile today and see what happens. I ran a mile and I was in pain for a week, but I recovered. And I said, well, I'm going to do it again. And so I did it again. And then I did a 2-mile race, and it was like, it's called Gator Gallop. It's during homecoming. I ran pretty well. I ran like a 14-minute 2-mile race or something like that.
That qualifies as pretty well.
And I was like, you know, because I ran a lot before I turned 30 and was kind of given the ixnay on it and had to stop running. I used to run a fair amount, not nearly as much as now. This is the most I've ever run in my life by far. But anyhow, I loved it so much, I just kept going. And 2 miles went to a little longer. And then I did a warrior dash, which is a 5K obstacle race, and I completed that. And then it was like, I'm going to do Tough Mudder, and that's like an 11-mile race. And then it was like, I'm going to do Then I was getting close to turning 50, and I was like, I got to complete my first 50K before I turn 50. And so I completed a 50K, and I just kept going. And it was, I just kind of laugh and say, you know, it's just a miracle. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at my MRI and you say, there's no way I should be, you know, I did a Spartan Ultra Beast this past year, which was, you know, 31 miles, 20,000 feet of elevation change and 78 obstacles. Jeez. And you look at my MRI and you say, doctors would be like, there's no way you should be able to do that. But I can. Mm-hmm. So I just say thank you to God for a gift. I don't deserve it, but I got it. And I just want to use my gift to encourage and inspire others, because that's the least I can do is pay it forward and just never give up. I'm not a big quitter. I may not be very smart. I may not be very fast. I may not be very strong, but the idea of quitting just is so distasteful to me that it's just something inside of me that just, you know, I don't like it. Believe me, I'm very tempted every race, but right. I don't like it.
when you were first coming back from the, where you were running the 1 mile and you were in pain for a week and the next week you tried it again. Once you got to that point where you could do, you know, 2 miles, 3 miles, 5K, 10K, something like that, and felt fairly pain free. Was there ever a point in that type of window where you thought, you know what, like maybe I shouldn't push my luck. Like maybe I'm okay here. I can run this. Maybe I should kind of stay in this window where I can still do this sport, this activity that I enjoy, but not keep trying to push farther. Or was that not part of your DNA either, where you just, I'm going to keep going until something forces me to not be able to keep going?
Right. These are great questions, Denny. I could talk to you for a long time. You're a great guy. You know, it was two things. The thought hasn't crossed my mind yet. Like, where will I stop? Mm. You know, I don't want to be foolish and I don't want to be arrogant. I understand that we all have limitations and, you know, I want to be respectful to my body. I want to be respectful to my limitations. And, you know, I have 5 kids and a wife, you know, that depend on me. And so I sure don't want to do anything stupid in pursuit of my own dreams that could become ultra costly to them. But I tend to tell people when that question comes up, because it does come up a lot. Being a trainer, I see people dealing with, you know, the internal world a lot in their pursuits. And I really love helping people sort through all that, because I think that's what really makes or breaks you, what goes on the inside. And so I tell people two things. I was like, you know, the doctors told me to quit when I was 30, and I have a big respect. I have a lot of doctor friends. I have a big respect for them. But, you know, you can't always listen to the voices around you. Sometimes you have to listen to the voice inside of you. And my inner voice just kept saying, follow the dream. Go after the dream. You know, don't quit. Don't stop just because of fear. Don't be afraid of what could happen. Mm-hmm. Because anything could happen. I could walk outside in Florida, get struck by lightning, or right, hit by a bus at any time. But it's probably not going to happen. And I couple that with, you know, being, you know, that I am a person of faith. You know, I try to sense, like, in my faith and in my relationship with Jesus, you know, what do you want me to do here? Like, I carefully pick each race. I know that could sound weird and crazy, and some of my friends think I am crazy for sure, and they laugh about it because many of them are not people of faith, and that's fine. They're my friends, and we care about each other. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I really try to sort it out and say, you know, what is it that you want me to do? I didn't just haphazardly pick a 100-mile race to do. You know, I didn't haphazardly pick doing, you know, Spartan Ultra Beast or any of these other races I'm doing. I want to follow my dream, and I want to make sure that I'm living out of who I am and who I believe God wants me to be. And am I being a good friend? Am I being a good husband, a good father to the people around me by doing this? Mm-hmm. And because a lot of people kind of look at my life as fuel for their own pursuits, just because I have a lot of people I connect with here in Gainesville and beyond. It's very humbling to be in that position. I didn't ask for it, but I accept the responsibility. And so, yeah, you know, I could easily ask myself that question, how far am I going to go and is it foolish? And I do at times, but I tend to more focus on the positive side and say, okay, where is the dream taking me? What's best for the people around me? You know, am I being true to myself? Am I being true to what I believe deep down inside? And if the answer to those things is yes, I just press forward. Mm-hmm. I don't think about, you know, could I be going too far? I do realize, though, that every race I do, every run I do, you know, could be my last. I hope it's not, but I know it's a gift and it could be my last. So I really try to celebrate and enjoy every training session, every race, because I know what it is to not be able to do it. And I know what it is to suffer. Mm-hmm. And so I really respect that. And I do celebrate what I do get to do and not focus on hopefully what I don't get to do and stuff like that. So that's a little bit of kind of my journey in this and what I kind of tell people when they ask.
Gotcha. You talked a couple times about following the dream. Is the dream, and it sounds like when you talk about it, that the dream is much bigger than a race distance or a 100-mile race or something like that. Is that something, can I ask that? Like what is the dream? What is it that you're following?
Sure. Sure. The dream for me, I've always, you know, I laugh because I say, well, man, when God was passing out testosterone, he must have gave me a bit extra or something because, you know, I'm a big visionary kind of guy. I like to not just dream big like airy fairy kind of thing, but I kind of see off into the distance what's possible and I like to get there. And, you know, I really feel like as a super rebellious teenager, you know, my life was really going down the tubes. Mm. I mean, it was almost over before it started. I mean, I could have been killed so many times, all the stupid things I was into. And that didn't happen. And, you know, I feel like all of us when we, you know, not to get too heavy or philosophical, you know, I could do that. I like to have fun, but I also, you know, like to think deep at times. Mm. But, you know, I feel like deep down inside, we all have this feeling like we were made for something bigger. And, you know, I would just like to see the city of Gainesville, the state of Florida, the United States, and the world. I'd like to leave this world better than when I came into it. Mm. I mean, my dream is to really, you know, help people, help families, help communities, not just survive, but thrive and really enjoy life. Because I spent so many years not enjoying life, mm-hmm. just so many years angry and upset and fearful and all these things that are just so unhealthy and cause me to treat others unhealthy in unhealthy ways. And so I just feel like my dream is to make the world a better place. And so I feel like that I can do some of these races, you know, doesn't make me better than anybody. It was a gift that I've kind of honed. I think we all have gifts that we need to hone and develop. And so I want to use my gifts to fulfill that dream. And so one of the things I do is, you know, I tend to be strong in the area of, you know, mental grit, mm-hmm. you know, that passion and perseverance for long-term goals. And so, you know, I want to help others develop that because I see how far it's taken me. You know, I want to help others develop, you know, their EQ, becoming aware of what's going on inside and being aware of the people around them and helping them. And I want to help people with their exercise and nutrition because, you know, those things matter. The mind, the body, and the soul, how you relate to yourself and others, that's really key in life and a quality of life that I want everyone around me to enjoy. Mm. So the dream for me is really big. And so I just went one step further a year and a half ago and I started you know, my company, Fearless Health, to help people in those three areas, in their mental grit, in their exercise and nutrition, and in their relationships, and coaching people in that. Because, you know, it's one thing to dream, but I have to keep taking steps. Mm-hmm. And then just to be, you know, my typical Andy self, I also have a dream of getting into the Western States 100. Mm. And so that keeps me, you know, having to keep qualifying every year until I get picked, because there's no way in you know what that I'm going to qualify for it in one of the golden ticket races. Mm-hmm. You have to be the first or second finisher right. in a golden ticket race. So I was like, well, I'm not going to get that. But if I can keep hitting these qualifiers every year, maybe my ticket will get pulled. And so that's one race. That's another dream I have, is I'd like to run the Western States 100. And but that's nothing compared to my bigger dream of what I've been describing. And I can go on forever about that, because it's really my passion, you know, to leave this world a better place and help individuals and families and communities really thrive in life. So
I love that. I love that idea of, you know, I think it's easy these days to kind of get stuck in our own bubble. You know, the family sure. bubble, the work bubble, the just what's ever real close to you. And so it's important to have folks like you who have that bigger vision and hopefully inspire some folks to look beyond their bubble a little bit and you know, join bubbles together and then you can really make a difference.
Yeah. It's really fun. We have a little phrase, better together. You know, it's really fun when people's bubbles kind of intersect and you can do it together. It's not just about me. It's about us, because, you know, I mean, honestly speaking, Denny, I mean, I could be, you know, totally into my own little world. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a total type A, you know, goal-driven kind of guy. And I'm so grateful for my wife and my kids, who have taught me so much about, you know, being about helping others. You know, I married a nurse. My oldest daughter's a nurse. You know, my son is in nursing school. You can see my wife's had a big influence
yeah,
on my family.
So.
But they have so taught me about that, and I've had to really get out of my own, you know, bubble, as you say, because it's easy for me to do. I could be all about my jobs and my goals and objectives, and I'm totally like that, you know, naturally. But, you know, I'm really glad that different people like my family and some key friends and mentors in my life, I've always had a mentor in my life helping me go further, or a coach, you know, that have really helped me to see these things as important, as important part of just enjoying mm-hmm. life and being a human being. So,
I agree. With the mental grit component, which you've also touched on a couple times, and if I'm going to be honest, that's not even probably. That's pretty much my weakest link in when it comes to running, and even sometimes with the podcast and growing my, you know, some of my business things and whatnot is that
yes.
that focus and that willingness to just keep grinding when it's not going well, when you're not
right.
feeling it.
Yes. When you feel really bad at times.
yeah, you know, and it almost feels like you're not making any progress, so what's the point? But at least I guess at that point you're not going backwards, so that's the point. But you know, I digress a little bit, but what are some things that someone like me, or someone like probably a fair number of people that are listening that maybe struggle with that mental component of their running, or even, you know, as it bleeds into other areas of their lives, do to try to build some of that mental strength and fortitude that, again, is one of those perfect metaphors and perfect ways that working as a distance runner or, you know, just being a distance runner can help you improve in so many other facets of life as well.
Yeah, that's another great question. I love talking about this stuff too, because honestly speaking, after working in gyms for, gosh, I've been working in gyms for like 25 years now. I just do that as a hobby on the side, just to help people and connect with people in the community. So, you know, I do that part time, but I've been in gyms for, you know, 25 years now, working and helping folks. And one of my trainer friends said it best: the weakest muscle in this gym is the brain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what goes on in your head and in your heart, I think really makes or breaks you. So I'm a big fan of really helping people with this area of mental grit. And, you know, just to not get on my soapbox, because I'm so passionate about wanting to see people get over the hump, because I always feel like the pot of gold is usually right beyond right where people get to. They typically stop right before they're going to get the pot of gold, you know. And so I learned a lot about mental grit being around military guys, especially special forces guys and, you know, Navy SEALs and things like that. And, you know, they're great people. You know, we see some of our military guys and, you know, people can be sometimes critical. I won't get off all that because, you know, the ones I've been around, they could be rough characters. I mean, they're no doubt they're pretty intimidating people typically, but a lot of them have hearts of gold. And some of the things that I've learned that have so helped me, I've learned from our military friends. And the first thing that really helps is control your breathing. Your breathing, you know, when your autonomic nervous system, which, you know, most of your body's functions occur subconsciously, right. Your autonomic nervous system. You know, when you feel threatened, your brain is a threat, non-threat organ. It's not a performance organ. So it's constantly visually scanning and trying to pick up data on, is there a threat? Is there a threat? And if it perceives any threat, it will go into fight or flight. And I like to say it typically goes into flight, which means avoidance. So if we, you know, have a pile of papers on our desk and we know we need to get it done, and all of a sudden we go into fight or flight, which is what's going to happen because we do see it as a threat. You know, right away you're thinking about how to avoid it. How can I procrastinate? Let me go wipe off my phone, or, you know, go get a snack, or, you know, organize my books or something. We're just avoiding at this point. And it's the same thing often with goals we set. You know, I don't want to do that. You just start avoiding it. But, you know, you have to calm yourself and slow down the flow of, you know, adrenaline and cortisol. And the way you do that is what they call in some of the military circles and in the, you know, SWAT circles and things like that, 4-count tactical breathing or 4-count box breathing. And it's just learning to slowly inhale for a quick 4-count, hold it for a 4-count. Exhale for a 4-count, hold it for a 4-count. And it's very quick. It's not a slow 4-count, it's just quick, but you slow your breathing down. And that sends signals to your brain that you're not under threat, that you're okay. Now, it's not enough just to, you know, 4-count tack.
Right.
Number two, you have to assess the situation and start your positive self-talk. Now, when I talk about positive self-talk, I don't mean airy-fairy, you know, you can do anything at any time and stuff like that, because as an engineer and as an analytical guy, I know that's not true. But you do have to reframe things into what's realistic and what's probable. So I always say, you know, you're crazy if you're not talking to yourself. And so I, in the middle of races or difficult tasks or when I'm really suffering, I will talk it through often out loud with myself. And I will frame things very positively, because that also signals your brain that you're not under threat, and it slows down your cortisol and adrenaline, which, you know, kills your rational skills.
Right.
And I find that in a long distance race or in any pursuit, whether it's running a business, volunteering in the community, parenting my kids, helping my wife, I need my rational skills. Otherwise, I'm just emoting, and being a flaming Italian, sometimes from New York, sometimes my emoting is not real healthy and not real helpful to people. So I want my rational skills. So I start talking it through. I start saying, Andy, this could happen, but you're okay. You're safe. You're moving forward. You can do this. You've done far worse. You know, heck, you've run Georgia Death Race. You know, you've overcome, you know, I'm not taking credit for it, but I'm just telling myself, you've come through 23 years of pain. You can do this. You can finish this task. You can complete this workout. You can get through this race. And so I start talking to myself as number two. So I breathe. I start positive self-talk, realistic positive self-talk. Number three, I always have a bag of mantras at my disposal. In the race I ran this past weekend, the Yeti Snakebite 50K, which was up in North Georgia, it was extremely humid. Seemed like it was uncharacteristically humid for Georgia. I couldn't spit it out.
Right.
But 155 runners started, 102 runners finished. I was the third oldest runner that finished, and I was able to finish 10th overall, which was, for me, a solid run. I mean, I just came in from, you know, I was just, it's a training run on the path to 100. But when I was going, it was a loop run. And so I'm going out for the third loop, and I did not feel like getting into that third loop. But I started with my positive self-talk, and then I had three mantras for that race. And I have mantras for every difficult task that I'm facing. And I come up with them in advance, and it was three things. Number one was, it's all good. Mm-hmm. So I try to have one that's kind of humorous and light, because, you know, sometimes things get kind of heavy. So you just want to keep it light. So sometimes I'm out there and I'm saying to myself, you know, looking good, feeling good, ought to be in Hollywood and all that kind of stuff. The second one was, you know, take courage, don't be afraid. You know, you're running around the woods in the middle of the night. You know, I have a bad ankle. I didn't want to roll it. I had rolled it really bad in the race at mile 14. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, if I roll this thing again, you know, I'm done. And it's like, no, no, relax. You've run further with a bad ankle. You're going to be okay. Don't be afraid. Take courage. And then the third one was just run hard. For some reason, those two words were just in my brain, run hard. And so four count box breathing, positive realistic self-talk, have mantras that mean something to you personally, get them, store them up and use them as much as you can. And then, you know, another one that I think is super helpful, maybe the most helpful, and I the Navy SEALs talk about this, the Special Force, everybody, they're all talking about it. You know, the guy next to you, help someone else around you. So when I'm in a race, if I happen to be around someone, you know, sometimes the ultra races, you get pretty spread out and you're not. Right. But if I'm around someone, I'm encouraging them. I'm telling them what a good job they're doing. I'm telling them they're, you know, they can do it. Hopefully whatever they need, I'm willing to do. I try to do that every race, every volunteer I thank, I high five. I appreciate you guys for being out here. We can't do this without you. If there's officers, you know, like in couple of the road races I've done, there's officers on the course. You know, thank you, officer, for protecting and serving us. Mm-hmm. You know, so help the people around you. So if you'll start with those four things, you are well on your way to developing mental grit. I promise.
Gotcha. Question with the mantras. It's always something that I've struggled with, but over the last year or so, I've tried to do a better job of incorporating it. And for me, it's really just been like one mantra, which is, it's been take the next step. So it fits for running, it fits for business, it fits for everything. You know, just try to do one more step today. But it almost sounds like you're a proponent of having multiple mantras for different situations in life. So maybe one for business, one for running, or maybe even multiples for the different components. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, I think it's more like this, Denny. A great question. I think I try to have one lighthearted, funny one, because humor can take you a long way. No matter what situation I'm in, whether it's family, even though you can specify for work and family and racing, if that resonates well with your brain, with your inner self, then I'm like all for it. Do it. But I just tend to think every situation I go into where I'm going to use mantras, I'm typically going to have one funny one. I'm going to have one kind of inspirational one, you know, and then one that is kind of testosterone-y New York Italian one. You know, like there's one race I was caught in my head about. Rangers lead the way. And I'm like, well, I'm no Ranger. I'm not even close, but I'm going to lead the way. And I'll pass people and stuff like that, you know. And so I think it's important that the most important thing about your mantras is, I find that typically people need more than one, because you get a little bored with just the same one all the time. And I do find that those three areas are very helpful to a lot of the people that I've worked with. If they have a funny one, an inspirational one, and like a kind of a gutsy, you know, some of my lady friends, they're not into the whole testosterone stuff. Some of them are very much, and it's saved them. They said, man, Andy, I could hear your voice in my head while I was, you know, racing. But, you know, you've got to find what works for Denny, mm-hmm. and each of us have to find what works for us. And so I would say have fun experimenting. I'm a big collector of inspirational quotes. I'm a big collector of funny quotes, and, you know, and I'm a big collector of inspirational, like Bible verses that mean mm-hmm. something to me. Mm-hmm. And I use all of them. I just use them, whatever's needed. You know, some races I only have one or two mantras. Some races I have, you know, three. Who knows what I'll do for the 100 miler. I may need a bunch, but, you know, I will reflect before the race, and I'll see what bubbles to the surface. I usually mm-hmm. reflect before a race or before an event, and I'll say, okay, what's bubbling to the surface right now? And whatever mantras come to the surface, those are my mantras for the race. Gotcha. Or for the whatever it is.
Yeah,
I hope that's helpful.
No, it definitely is. I love the idea of having a something that's humorous, because I love to laugh, and so I hadn't even thought about having just something that's kind of stupid. It could be an inside joke, whatever, you know, whatever happens yes. to tickle you on that at that moment. But I will definitely be adopting that. I can promise you that I'm need to come up with a couple of lighthearted type of mantras to keep you going and make you smile while you're doing it.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's key. I wish I would have learned that sooner. That is not my natural bent. I'm kind of a very go for it, serious kind of person at times, but I find that that's not good to always be that mm-hmm. way. And so I've really adopted this, you know, I'm going to have some funny, silly stuff. Like one of my races, my only mantra was for the Spartan Ultra Beast. I think I had two, but the main one was just run, jump, play. That's all I kept telling myself right. the whole time. I'm just on this big playground all day, run, jump, play. Mm-hmm. And that's what I needed for that situation.
Yeah.
So it just depends on the given situation.
Gotcha. So Andy, as we're wrapping up today, I'd love to ask, you know, with this 100 miler on the horizon, you know, as we're recording just a couple of months, just over 2 months away, what are you most looking forward to about the 100 miles distance and maybe the race in particular? And what are you most, I don't know if worried is quite the right word, but what is the thing that maybe is a little bit more trepidation, or the thing that brings the most trepidation about
the 100
miles?
I hear you. Believe me. I was laughing when you were asking the question, because it was like, I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, I'm finishing this race this past weekend, and I'm, you know, I'm feeling pretty beat up. And I'm like, man, I'd have like almost 70 miles to go. So there is definitely some trepidation there. I mean, I do know that I'm going to suffer. Mm-hmm. You always do. That's the great thing I love about these long races, is that you go through all these different cycles and seasons, and you know that in every one of them, there's going to be times you're going to feel really bad. You never feel good throughout a whole long race. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, part of it attracts me to it is that, you know, and this is more the positive side, is I want to see what will happen, and how my curious side and my experimental and pioneering side, like how will we come out of this, and what mm. will I learn from this, and how can I help others with what I learn? So I'm excited about that part of the experience. What I learned from this 100-mile race, to me, it's like going to a developmental seminar. Only it's a life experience. It's developing me as a leader and as a person. And so I'm excited about what I'll learn from this experience. And I think it'll help me get more in touch with who I really am. And, you know, because when you're suffering the way you are in some of these long races, you're stripped of all, you know, pretense and, you know, BS or whatever you want to call it. And it's what you got is what you got. Mm-hmm. And it's yourself. The real you is there. And so it can be really beautiful at times, and it could be really ugly at times. And so I'm looking forward to that developmental experience. I would be lying to you if I didn't say this, but I really am visualizing myself crossing the finish line. And I have been for months. And the joy that I will feel in this journey of the last 6 years, and really for the last almost 25 years of 1 mile to 100 miles. Mm-hmm. That's one of my mantras, is from 1 mile to 100. And so I'm excited about that, about crossing the finish line. I do that. I say that humbly, good Lord willing, mm-hmm. I will do that. And I'm excited about, you know, what I'll learn from it, how I can better help others. I'm excited about another life experience that will be very meaningful to me. I'm really happy about sharing it with a good buddy of mine, Joe, who's going to be, you know, running it with me, whether we get to run together or not. Mm-hmm. I think we will part of the way, hopefully for most of the way, but it'll be a great shared experience. There's so many things, but I am fully aware, and I do feel tense at times. And you'll typically see it in my face some before a race start. I do get a little uptight before races start. Ask my wife; she can tell I'm kind of starting to go into that intensity mode. And I do know I'm preparing to suffer. Mm-hmm. Human nature is to avoid suffering at all costs. But you know, pain and suffering, though I hate it and I don't wish it on anybody, it is inevitable in life. And I think it's part of the process of becoming fully human. Mm-hmm. And some of the greatest people I've ever met, when I've heard their life stories, they've gone through tremendous suffering, and it's made them better instead of bitter. Mm. So I'm just hoping that, you know, my bouts with suffering in these things will make me better and not bitter. And, so I can make, you know, fulfill the dream that has been on my heart for many decades.
Well, that's better, not bitter. That's gold right there. I like that a lot. So, wow. I feel like we could keep doing this for quite a bit longer, but we got to put a cap on it at some point, but maybe we'll circle back at some point after you get that 100-mile finish, and we'll see how things went and where the future might hold. But guys, again, at Andy Farina on the Twitter, I'll have the links to Instagram, Facebook, and a whole lot more in the show notes for this episode. You can find it at dizruns.com/306. So Andy, I mean, gosh, I don't know what to say. I remember when I got to my first finish line of a marathon and just how that felt. And I can't even imagine what it would be like, you know, times four of you know, at least maybe exponentially to the fourth power of what it'll feel like for you at the finish line of the 100-mile race. But I can't wait to hear how it goes. I'll certainly be following along both through the Ultra group and just now, you know, now that we have that connection too,
following along and
seeing how it goes, and everybody be rooting for you. So nothing but the best at that race and everything else going forward, and Godspeed on your 100-miler, my friend.
Hey, thanks so much, Denny. It has been a real pleasure, and it's totally enjoyable conversation. I really have appreciated time with you, and I hope there's something in there that can contribute to the joy and well-being and inspiration of you and your family and people out there. So this has been great, and I would love to do it again. I would talk with you anytime, Denny. You're a great conversationalist, and I find that conversationalists are becoming more and more rare. So major kudos to you, and major kudos in your running. Let me tell you, every race is relative, and you finished a marathon, and that's phenomenal. So I would say just keep having fun with it and keep developing and enjoy the ride.
Well, thank you, sir. Same to you.
All right, Denny.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Andy and myself as much as I did. It was a lot of fun and definitely lots of insights and takeaways from this episode. And as always, I'd love to know what stood out to you. What was your main takeaway from our chat today? Lots of things for me, but the one that I'm going to choose to highlight came from the beginning of the episode, kind of the early part of our chat. And I didn't want it to be overshadowed. So that's why I'm going to shine a little light back on that moment when we were talking about kind of training and how to, how Andy with his engineering kind of background likes to manufacture or figure out ways to be creative with his training and find things that work. And just that idea of thinking outside the box. I think sometimes I'm very guilty of bemoaning the fact that, and I mean, you've heard me several times talk about, you know, here in Central Florida, all we can do is run in the swamps and there's not a lot of hills and blah, 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 blah. And that's the reason why I haven't gotten into, you know, ultra running. maybe I need to start being creative. Maybe I need to look outside the box and appreciate that yes, I don't have mountains in my backyard. I can't go run in forest trails for hours and just enjoy the beauty of the world that we live in, or at least the beauty of that part of the world. But that doesn't mean that I can't go run on the trails that we do have. That doesn't mean that I can't find a way to run hills, whether it's highway overpasses, whether it's finding a way to get to a stadium and running stadium steps. You know, and we may not have the swamp here in town, but we have some stadiums that have some steps. And again, you know, if it doesn't have 100 rows, it has 50 and you do them twice. You know, it's just a matter of being creative and going, this is what I'm training for. This is what I need to accomplish. How can I get there? And then reverse engineer it. And something that, again, I know, but I don't always put into practice. And so it was just a good reminder that our biggest obstacle is often ourselves, whether it's the mental side, whether it's just figuring out ways of being creative to train, or you know, whether it's something else completely separate from running as well. But, you know, get out of my own way is what I need to probably do more often than I currently do. So that was my takeaway from this episode, and I'd love to hear what it was for you. What stood out to you during this chat? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head to the show notes for this episode and leave a comment. DizRuns.com/306 will get you there and get you links to anything that we talked about and the contact info for Andy as well. And you can say hi and let him know that you appreciate him taking the time to come on the show today. So with that, I'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. Don't forget, September 15th. Sorry, got to get that right. Next week, the price for the Coterie does go up. So if you get in before then, your price will be locked in at the current rate. Check out DizRuns.com/Coterie for all the information about the group, and let me know what questions you might have, and I'll be happy to answer them for you. So with that, thanks for listening, guys. I hope you have a great rest of the day, and look forward to talking to you again real soon. Take care, guys.